no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This week on the Relic Radio Show, our hour of radio drama begins with Escape. We'll hear the May 10th, 1953 episode titled The Vessel of Wrath. After that, it's Screen Directors Playhouse and Saigon, their story from July 29th, 1949.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are on a paradise island, living in happiness and freedom, while the woman who loathes you for what you are is planning to take away your freedom and forever put an end to your happy life.
Listen now as Escape brings you Somerset Maugham's unusual story, The Vessel of Wrath.
As I sit here with the sea-cooled breezes coming into the open window and the sounds of the breakers washing the sands before my house, I think of the fireplaces and the people I have known there. In particular, I think of the thing that happened in the chain of islands known as the Alas Group, which is a fair distance from Java. It extends about 75 miles east and west and 40 miles north and south. At a certain moment of the world's history, the controller of the principal island, which is called Baru, was Mynheer Everett Grutter. And he ruled the people who inhabited the Alas Islands with firmness, tempered by a keen sense of the ridiculous. He was very short and extremely fat, and he had twinkling blue eyes. He knew that he had no dignity in his form, but for the sake of his position, he made up for it by dressing very dapperly. One morning in the early heat of summer, his head boy came into his bedroom while he was dressing.
What is it?
Tuan Jones, Mynheer. He wishes to see you.
Oh, what an unholy hour for a holy man to call.
Yes, Mynheer.
Very well. Ask the Tuan to wait and say I shall come directly.
Tuan Jones was the Reverend Owen Jones in charge of the Baptist mission on the Alas Islands. His headquarters were also on the island of Baru. He was a tall, thin, melancholy man with a long face, sallow and drawn, of about 40. He lived with his sister in a little white house about a half mile from the village. She was about the same age as her brother and bore a remarkable resemblance. Mr. Grutter both disliked and respected the Reverend Mr. Jones. Disliked him because he was narrow-minded and dogmatic. Respected him because he was honest and good and the only qualified doctor in the group. At any event, Mr. Grutter buttoned up his tunic, went into the sitting room. Reverend Owen Jones got up.
Good morning, Mr. Jones. Have you come in to have a peg with me before I start my day's work?
I've come to see you upon a very distressing matter, Mr. Grutter.
Oh. Sit down, my dear fellow, and have a cigar.
Thank you, no. I neither smoke nor drink, Mr. Grutter.
Yes, of course. How could I forget? Please, sit down, Mr. Jones. What can I do for you?
I've come to see you about the man they call Ginger Ted. I want to know what you're going to do about him.
Why, what has happened?
It's disgraceful. There was a disgraceful row in one of the Chinese shops last night. Ginger Ted wrecked the place and half killed the owner.
Drunk again, I suppose.
Naturally. When is he anything else? It took six men to get him to jail.
Well, he is a hefty fellow.
He must be deported from these islands, Mr. Grutter. Absolutely must.
Oh?
The man's presence is a public scandal. He's never sober from morning to night. And as for his behavior with the native women...
Yes.
Well, Mr. Grutter, you know this man's transgressions just as well as I do. It's grown steadily worse ever since he came here. Now he has really overstepped the limit. I beg you to use your power and turn him out once and for all.
It is time for me to go to my office, Mr. Jones. I shall see what must be done. I wish you good morning.
A few minutes later, Mr. Grutter was in his office, where he immediately called for Ginger Ted to be brought before him. The man was led in with the warder on either side. They left him standing there. He swayed a little, and obviously was suffering from a furious hangover. He had a black eye, and his mouth was cut and swollen. Now, Mr. Grutter was quite upset, for this unappetizing object had shared many a bottle of beer with him, and he liked the reckless way in which Ginger Ted squandered the priceless treasure of life. He looked at the charge sheet before him.
I see that you smashed up Lum Wang's shop to smithereens, then proceeded to break his head with a bottle, resisted arrest, and knocked flat the sergeant. What have you to say for yourself?
I was blind. I don't remember a thing about it. Oh, yet. They say I off-killed him. I suppose I did. I'll pay the damage if they give me time.
You will, Ginger, but it's me who will give you time. You are a disgrace. Incorrigible. You have kicked up row after row. I can see it is hopeless.
You know I meant no harm.
That is what you always say. Look here, why can't you behave yourself? We are friends, aren't we?
Of course we are.
Well, you have made a devil of a mess this time, and the Reverend Jones is all for having you kicked out.
Oh.
I have got to do something about it, or he will write to the governor in Batavia.
No,
and he is quite right. You have got to be punished. I am sentencing you to 6 months on Mapatiti.
Oh.
Hard labor.
Oh.
All right. Now, how about a bottle of beer with me before you go? You look as though you need it.
It's the truth, I do. You're a pal, Mr. Grutter.
Ginger Ted took his sentence with good grace. One, he knew he had overstepped the bounds, and two, there were several rather delightful native girls on the island of Maputiti that he had not seen for several months. He bore the controller no malice for his punishment, and he was sent to pay his debt. The 6 months had passed but for a few days when chance stepped in. The head man of Maputiti was stricken with a sudden illness. Messengers were sent to Baru, 50 miles across the sea, and help was begged of the missionary, the Reverend Mr. Jones. But Mr. Jones was at that moment enduring an attack of malaria. He was in bed and talked the matter over with his sister.
It sounds as though the head man had acute appendicitis.
You can't go, Owen. You can't.
Oh, I can't let the man die.
But you couldn't operate in the state you're in.
No, I suppose not, but I...
I'll do it.
You can't remove an appendix.
Why not? I've seen you do it. Done lots of minor operations.
I can't allow it. It's too dangerous. They wouldn't understand. A woman? No.
I'm going, and that's all there is to it.
And so Miss Jones went by launch to Maputiti. She performed the operation on the headman under the greatest difficulties, and it is to her everlasting credit that she saved his life. And when she saw that he was well on the mend, she packed up the medicine chest and was taken down to the wharf where she embarked on the launch to take her back to Baru. On the out journey, she had been the only passenger, but now there was another, Ginger Ted. He had paid his debt to society and was returning for another chance. The crew consisted of the head boatman and a mechanic, both native. They were about 30 miles out in the open sea when Ginger Ted took the stopper out of a bottle of arak and took a long pull.
Oi, chum. How's you about to swig?
Thank you, Ginger.
Boatman, I do not wish you to drink anything while we're on the journey. Do you understand?
Yes. Oh, yes. A little arak can do no one any harm. Thank you.
If you drink again, I shall complain to the controller.
Miss Jones knew they were being extremely rude at her expense, and she closed her thin lips even more tightly. Her long, bony face became grim. They went due east, and the sun set radiantly behind one of the small islands. The sea was like glass, and Miss Jones suddenly felt her heart filled with gratitude for the beauty of the world. It was then that there was a lurch, and the launch began to vibrate, and the engine rattled.
Oi! What's up? Propeller, Ginger. We scrape free.
Can we make it back to Baru tonight?
Better we not. Better we stop at Island and fix.
Right. Oi, miss. You're going to have to put over at the little island over there. Put out a new propeller in the morning when the tide's out.
That's impossible. I can't spend the night on an uninhabited island with three men.
A lot of women would jump at it.
How dare you speak to me like that? I think you're very insolent. If you don't go on to Baru, I'll have you all put in prison.
Now, look here. We're not going to Baru. We can't. The engine breaks down all the way. Who knows where we'll drift to? Now, if you don't like it, you can get out and swim.
Oh, you'll pay for this.
Oh, shut up, you old cow.
From then on, Ginger Ted was occupied with the rather tricky job of beaching the launch. Miss Jones sat quivering with indignation, and then, as the full meaning of what lay before her dawned, her anger turned to fear.
I see it all now. I see it all. There's nothing at all the matter with the propeller. He wants to get me ashore, where he has me at his will, to do his worst. Oh, I know his character. Despicable, horrid. And there can be no help from the natives. He's bribed them to help. But I must have courage. I shall sell my virtue dearly. Dearly. And if he kills me, then I should rather die than...
And in her fear, she removed a scalpel from the surgical instrument she had so lately used to save her life and hid it in her clothing. Then they were ashore. Then the night came. Ginger Ted did his best.
Oi, miss. Come on over to the fire. Got some lovely grub here. Nip of arrack won't hurt you neither.
I want nothing. I want to be left alone.
Oh, you can go to the devil then. Go hungry. Don't mean nothing to me. How'd you like this? You're quite a bit nice and not
there. She walked away with head erect, the scalpel held tightly in her fist. And though she was looking for a place to hide, a place of safety, her instinct told her it was better to keep that bad man in sight. And then if he came toward her, she would be prepared. The moonlight would show him to her. Presently she found a little hollow and sank down into it, where in the distance she saw the warm glow of the fire and the huddled, dreadful shapes of men around it.
He's plotting it now. He's making them drink. So they'll sleep soundly. I'm afraid. I'm so afraid. Oh. But if that horrible, loathsome man makes a step, comes near, I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
We will return to Escape in just a moment, but first, in time of accident or emergency, it helps to be in good financial condition. That's why it pays to invest in United States savings bonds. When you need money, the new 3% United States savings bond is better than ever. And now, back to Escape.
It should be mentioned again that Miss Jones was a woman hard on 40. She had an odd, drooping gracefulness and was extremely flat and thin. Her features were much like her brother's, the Reverend Owen Jones, and she suffered a good deal from indigestion. But at that moment, her suffering bore a pain which was far more exquisite.
What shall I do? What have I done to deserve this?
Then she prayed, then trembled, as terrible phantoms crossed her mind. And the time passed. She saw the fire at the beach die down. And now was the time that Ginger Ted might be expected to turn on the woman who was at his mercy. He smothered a cry, for suddenly he got up and walked in her direction. She clenched the scalpel more tightly.
Who?
you couldn't understand it.
Why? Why?
Why? And then when she saw him go back to the fire and knew that for the moment at least he was spared, her nerve gave way. After that, she felt a little better and decided to close her eyes for a moment. The strain of watching had tired them, and when she opened them again, it was morning. And with a sudden shock of fear, she found that she was covered with two copra sacks. He must have done it.
Good morning. I was just going to wake you up. There's Bernard's breakfast. Come on, his hand.
Oh, thank you. Mister,
What?
Nothing.
I have missed you, Ginger. Here's luck.
Same to you, Mr. Grutter.
Well, you don't bear me any malice for the sentence I gave you, I hope?
No bloody fear. I didn't have a bad time, you know. Nice lot of girls, I met you, Titi. You ought to give me a look over one of these days.
You are a bad lot, Ginger. By the way, I've been saving a remittance from England while you are away. I took out for the damage you did, and still there is a little over £30 left. That's a lot of money out here. You really ought to do something useful with it.
I'm going to. Spend it.
Mind here. Juan Jones wishes to speak with you. Very important, he says.
Mr. Grutter, I shan't detain you long. I heard that... Oh, there you are, Ginger. I've been trying to find this good man all day, Mr. Grutter.
Hmm?
And I heard he was here.
How is Miss Jones? None the worse for her night in the open, I trust?
No, not at all. I want to thank you.
Oh, me?
You did a great and noble thing.
Me?
My sister is right. One should always look for the good in their fellow man. I have misjudged you in the past. I beg your pardon.
What in the blazes are you talking about?
You had my sister at your mercy, and you spared her. She was defenseless in your power, and you had pity on her. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Neither my sister nor I will ever forget. I thank you.
What in bloody blue blazes does he mean? Oi, Grutter. What's so funny? Oi. If you don't stop laughing, I'll break your bloody head open.
Well, he's thanking you for having respected the virtue of Miss Jones.
What?
Yeah.
Me? Me? That old cow? What does he take me for?
Well, you have a reputation of being rather hot stuff with a girl, Ginger.
Oh, I wouldn't touch her with the fag end of a 10-foot barge pole. Never entered my head. The ruddy nerve. I'll wring his blasted neck. Look here. Give me my money. I'm going to get drunk.
I don't blame you.
That old cow.
Here you are. Go and get drunk, Ginger, Ted, but I warn you, if you get into mischief, it'll be 12 months next.
I shan't get in mischief, don't worry. But it's an insult, that's what it is. A bloody insult. Dirty swine. What does it take me for?
Ginger Ted got drunk. Then he stayed drunk for a week. His pride had been hurt. And to make matters worse, the Reverend Mr. Jones and his sister decided it was their duty to save him and do something for him. They appealed to Mr. Grutter, who said,
"Well, if I were you, Mr. Jones, I wouldn't try to save him until he's got through his money. Then if he is not in jail, you can do what you like."
But Ginger Ted didn't want to be saved. He spent his money and then sulked, waiting for the next remittance from London. Miss Jones was unrelenting. She invited him to dinner and spoke to Mr. Grutter about it.
Oh, Mr. Grutter, my brother is very anxious that we should have the man they call Ginger Ted to supper with us. And I've written him a little note inviting him for the day after tomorrow. I think he's rather shy. I wonder if you'd come with him.
Well, that is very kind of you.
My brother feels that we ought to do something for him.
Have woman's influence and all that sort of thing.
Will you persuade him to come?
Well, I do my best, Miss Jones.
Tell me, Mr. Grutter, how old is he?
According to his passport, 37.
And what is his real name? Surely not Ginger Ted.
Edward Wilson.
Edward Wilson?
Yes.
Edward Wilson.
The controller actually persuaded Ginger Ted to join him. This on the promise of several drinks at his own house before they went to dine. But on the night of the party, Mr. Cooter had to go alone. Ginger Ted was dead drunk outside the Chinese wine and grocery shop and not fit for anything.
I am very sorry, Miss Jones.
I'm afraid it's no good, Martha. The man's hopeless.
No, never, Owen. No one is hopeless. Everyone has some good in him. I shall pray for him every night. I shall pray that he sees the light.
Perhaps Miss Jones was right in this, but the divine providence took a very funny way of effecting its ends. It came in the form of a cholera epidemic on Baru and several other of the neighboring islands, and the natives were in a panic. It was more than the Reverend Mr. Jones could handle, and it was going to need more doctors, and this would take time. Mr. Grutter held a conference with Mr. Jones and his sister.
We are ready to put ourselves at your disposal, Mr. Grutter. I need not tell you that my sister is as competent as any man.
I should be very glad of her assistance. But I am afraid it does not work for a woman. She would have to go to some of the outlying islands. We cannot possibly spare you, Mr. Jones.
Then, of course, I shall go.
Ah, but it might be dangerous. Some of the natives are still treacherous. You would have too much trouble with them.
I'm not afraid.
I dare say, but if you get your throat cut, I shall get into trouble. Besides, we are so short-handed here on Baru, I do not want to risk losing your health.
Then let Mr. Wilson come with me. He knows the natives and speaks their dialects.
Ginger Ted? Oh, no, he's just getting over an attack of the DTs. He has been drunk for weeks. That's out of the question.
I wonder if it would be wise, after all.
I trust him, Owen. I shall always trust him.
Oh, there was a great deal more discussion, but in the end, Ginger Ted was sent for. He looked ill. He was in rags and hadn't shaved for weeks. No one could have looked more disreputable.
Look here, Ginger. It is about this cholera business. We've got to force the natives to take precautions, and we want you to help us.
Why the devil should I?
Well,
it was my suggestion, Mr. Wilson. You see, I was afraid to go alone. I thought if you came, I should be safer.
Well, what do you suppose I care if they cut your nutty throat? It don't mean a thing to me.
There's no reason. You should care, I suppose. It's all right. I'll go alone.
A lot of bloody foolishness for a woman to go out there alone.
I dare say, but it's my job. And I can't help myself. I'm sorry if I offended by asking you. It wasn't really fair to ask you to share such a risk, was it?
All right, all right. Have it your own way. I'll come with you. When do you want to start?
They started the next day with drugs and disinfectants in the government laundry. For 4 months, the epidemic raged, and then one day it was over. Mr. Grutter had seen nothing of Ginger Ted or Miss Jones, but he had heard from Mr. Jones that they had performed a Herculean task in the outer island. Mr. Grutter was thinking of Ginger Ted over a bottle of beer one evening when the man came in. He was wearing a clean suit of white ducks. He was shaved. He looked another man.
Why, Ginger, what on earth has happened? By heaven, I'm glad to see you. You look wonderful. Here, have some beer. Man, I have missed you. Here, let me pour it.
I don't think I'll have any, thank you.
What?
I don't mind having a cup of tea, though.
A cup of what?
I'm on the wagon. Martha and I want to be married.
Ginger, you can't marry Miss Jones. No one could marry Miss Jones.
Well, I'm going to. That's what I've come to see you about. First thing, soon as I get off the launch. We want to be married by Dutch law as well as chapel.
Oh, come now, a joke is a joke, Ginger.
She wanted it. She fell for me that night we spent on the island when the propeller broke.
Ginger, she'll make you into a missionary.
Well, I don't know as I'd mind if we did have a little mission of our own. She says I'm a bloody marvel with the natives. Says I can do more in 5 minutes with him than Owen can in a year.
I guess she had an eye on you. But this... Listen to me, Ginger. We have had some grand times together, and a friend is a friend. I tell you what I do. I'll lend you the launch, and
it's
you can
no
go away
good,
from...
Mr. Grouter. I know you mean well, but I'm going to marry the blasted woman, and that's that.
You must do something about it, Mr. Jones. This is madness.
My sister is of full age and entitled to do as she pleases.
But you don't mean to tell me you approve of it. You know Ginger Ted. Ginger Ted, Mr. Jones. Have you told her the risk she is running? Does the leopard ever change his spot?
My sister is a very determined woman, Mr. Grouter. From that night they spent on the island together, he never had a chance.
Mr. Grouter was beaten and he knew it. Then the next day, sportingly, he went to pay his compliments to Miss Jones, who was preparing for her wedding.
How nice of you to come, Mr. Grouter. I've been wanting to tell you how splendid Edward was through this terrible time. He's a hero. He's a saint. Even I was surprised.
I hope you will be very happy, Miss Jones.
Oh, I know I shall. And you'll never guess where we're going for our honeymoon.
Java?
No. If you'll lend us the launch, we shall go to that island where we were marooned. It has very tender recollections for both of us. It was there that I guessed how fine and good Edward was. It is there that I shall let Edward begin his new life.
Mr. Grouter caught his breath. He left quickly, for he thought that unless he had a bottle of beer at once, he would have a fit. He was never so shocked in his life.
Escape has brought you Somerset Maugham's The Vessel of Wrath. Direction and adaptation of the story were by Anthony Ellis. In order of their appearance, you have heard Ben Wright as the narrator, Parley Bear as Mr. Grouter, Eric Snowden as Mr. Jones, Alan Reed as Ginger Ted, Jeanette Nolan as Miss Jones, and Dave Young as the head boatman. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week.
You are on a planet of desolation and utter ruin, awaiting the return of your comrades to carry you to safety. While about you, the crawling and evil remains of life are slowly hemming you in and ruthlessly tracking you down to your death.
So listen next week when Escape brings you Charlie Smith's unusual story, North of Polaris. Tomorrow night on CBS Radio, here concluded Suspense's production of Shakespeare's tragic drama, Othello. Richard Widmark plays Iago, Elliot Lewis, Othello, and Kathy Lewis, Desdemona. Also tomorrow night, don't miss the Lux Radio Theater's charming excursion into fantasy, The Bishop's Wife, starring Cary Grant and Phyllis Thaxter. Othello concluded on Suspense and The Bishop's Wife on Lux Radio Theater tomorrow night on most of these same CBS radio stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, America buys 30,000 new radio sets a day and listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
Oh, waiter.
Yes, sir?
I'll have a cottage cheese and sour cream salad, a plate of scallions, some toasted rye bread, and a bottle of cold Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yes, sir. Finest beer served anywhere.
From Hollywood, Pabst Blue Ribbon, finest beer served anywhere, proudly presents...
Screen Directors Playhouse, production Saigon, director Leslie Fenton, star Alan Ladd.
The Hollywood Screen Directors present an interlude of adventure, Saigon, starring Alan Ladd. And introducing the director of the film, Leslie Fenton. By and large, a motion picture has three main elements: the story and the cast, and the creative force which welds them into exciting entertainment. We mean, of course, the screen director, represented here tonight by a distinguished actor who turned to the creating of such fine films as Whispering Smith, The Streets of Laredo, and tonight's story, Saigon. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Leslie Fenton.
Thank you. Few places seem as remote from these United States as Saigon, a metropolis buried in the tip of French Indochina. There's a strange romantic flavor in the very sound of the name, and a certain strange glamour. Here is the raw material of adventure, and the story you're about to hear is an adventure film for adventure's sake. Now listen to it for the first time on the air, starring Alan Ladd in his original role of Larry Briggs. Saigon.
Mr. Briggs, if a police officer may speak his mind, you will find Indochina hospitable, but only to a point. There are evil men, Mr. Briggs, who found the war profitable. Now, some of these men consider my country a safe hiding place. It is not, Mr. Briggs. It is not.
This is you he's talking to, Larry Briggs. How did you get into this? Saigon? The girl? The briefcase? Who started it? The war was over. You were discharged from the Air Corps. You and Mike Perry and Pete Rocco. You were in Shanghai at the base hospital talking to the surgeon. That's when it started, with the surgeon talking about Mike.
I'm sorry, Major Briggs. 2 to 3 months at the longest.
Does Mike know?
No, not yet.
What a mess. What a stinking, rotten mess. All that pain, 6 months of slicing and patching. For this.
He'll appear perfectly normal, but the brain tissues have been irreparably damaged.
Doc, do me a favor, will you?
If I can.
Let us tell him. Sergeant Rocco and I. We're his friends, you know. We can, well, you know.
I understand.
And don't say I was here. Tell him I phoned that I wanted him to meet us at the Jade Cafe.
Very well. One more thing. It's 3 months at the most. Any physical or emotional shock would shorten his time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll remember. Figure it out, Pete. Figure it out. Why does it have to be like this?
How are we going to tell him?
We're not.
Huh? But, Larry, you told the doctor...
Nobody tells him. And, Pete, we're going to pack those 2 or 3 months of his with 100 years of good living. The best. No rough spots.
Larry,
and no
Pete.
Bones.
Here he comes. Well, well, how are you, Mike?
Well, not even a headache, are you, Skipper? It's
about time you stopped lying around in bed.
Some picnic I had, huh? And when are we going home?
We aren't, Mike. That is, Pete and I aren't.
What? You're wacky.
No, no, look, the Skip and I, we got a flying job lined up in the Orient.
Want to cut yourself in, Mike?
I got an awful yen to go home.
Oh, look, it's just a couple of months, Mike, and good money.
Uh-oh, 5 o'clock. I've got an appointment with Alex Maris to close that flying deal. Think about it, Mike. Work on him, Pete. Work hard.
Please sit down, Mr. Briggs. Mr. Maris will see you in a moment.
Thanks. Are you Maris's wife?
I'm Mr. Maris's secretary.
Oh. He has a beautiful home here. You fit in very well.
Yes. Doesn't she, Mr. Briggs? Miss Cleaver is one of my most tasteful accoutrements. You may leave us, Susan.
You decided to make your fight, Mr. Maris. If the price is right, of course.
$10,000?
What are we doing, smuggling rubies?
A simple business trip, Mr. Briggs. Now as to your instructions. Be ready to take off for Saigon at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. And I mean 6 p.m., Mr. Briggs. Not 1 minute later.
6 p.m. you're paying for? 6 p.m. you'll get.
$29. That does it. Hit him.
Ha ha, brother, does she purr? We're going trying again, Mike.
The things I let you guys talk me into.
Come on. What about Maris? It's after 6 o'clock already. This light isn't going to hold forever.
He's probably making time with that mouse you told us about. You know, that secretary.
This is probably him driving up now.
Mr. Briggs, Mr. Maris will be a bit delayed.
The mouse? Well, what do you know?
Hey, Larry, she's pretty. Introduce us, huh?
Huh? Susan Cleaver, Mike Perry, and Pete Rocco.
Delighted. Hello. One of you please put my bags aboard.
Miss Cleaver, we're flyers, not servants.
It's all right, Larry. I'll take them.
No, not the briefcase. Leave that with me.
Hey, what's holding up your boss?
That's his car horn. He'll be here immediately. Mr. Maris!
Mr. Maris seems to be having his problems.
It's like old home week on Guadalcanal.
Mike, turn him over.
Hey, what's the hurry?
Those sound like police bullets.
So?
So we can't afford to get mixed up with cops, not with Mike along.
You can't leave.
It's after 6, Miss Cleaver. We're leaving on schedule.
No, not without Alex.
Want to come?
You can't leave.
Such loyalty. She'll go down in history with the Saint Bernard.
You can't go without him. I won't let you.
Are you going or staying? Make up your mind.
I'll go.
Welcome aboard, Miss Cleaver. We made a deal to fly to Saigon at 6, and we're keeping it. I'll fly her for a while, Mike.
Hey, Larry, don't you think you're being kind of rough on the girl?
She hasn't been a personality kid with us either.
Oh, she's okay.
All right, she's wonderful. And I'll bet there's something wonderful in that briefcase, too. The way she keeps hanging on to it.
Hey, Larry, there must be a gas leak. We've been dropping fuel ever since we took off. I don't think we'll make Saigon.
Mike, there's an emergency field up the river from Saigon at Lingdao.
Lingdao? Hey, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, there's a European hotel. I was there once.
Okay, all the course to 163, Larry.
I got you.
Yeah, some hotel. Looks like it fought the war personally.
Yes, please. You wish rooms?
Yeah, 4 rooms.
Please sign. So sorry. It is ruled. No baggage. Must pay in advance.
We got baggage. We left it in the plane.
No baggage. Must pay in advance.
Forgive me for intruding, but the guests do have baggage. I see the young lady has a briefcase.
Hey, who's this guy? A red cap?
Allow me to introduce myself. I am Lieutenant Kayon.
Army?
Unhappily, a policeman.
You're honored.
My pleasure. Good day.
Sir, could you please show me my room?
I'll go back to the plane for your things, Susan. See you later, fellas.
Well, it looks like Mike's fallen for the mobs.
Dame like that, he's sure to get hurt.
Hey, that cop. He was awful interested in her briefcase.
A girl we don't know. Cops, bullets, that briefcase of hers.
Well, so what? That's her business. The mouse gets into trouble. Tough luck.
We all came here together, Pete. We might be part of that bad luck. So I think the time has come for the mouse and I to talk.
Would you please get out of my room?
Not yet, Susie. I'd like to see that briefcase.
Get out!
Don't make me take it away from you.
No!
All right. Have it your way.
Give it back!
Now, let's see what's so important.
Now, you've seen. It's Mr. Maris's money.
$1,000 bills. There must be half a million here.
Doesn't concern you.
10,000 of it does. That was our agreement. As for the rest, I'll make a deal with you, Susie. There's a riverboat leaving for Saigon in the morning. I want you to get out of our lives tonight. Go aboard. You do that, Susie, and I'll mail the briefcase in your name to Saigon. General delivery.
You thief! I won't. I won't do it.
You'll do it. This briefcase means too much to you. Night, Susie girl.
Ah, Mr. Briggs.
Lieutenant Keon.
Merely inspecting your accommodations. We want you to be comfortable, Mr. Briggs.
Are the police always this helpful to tourists?
What we gain with solicitude, we usually lose with bluntness. May I see that briefcase? Thank you. So, you must be a wealthy man, Mr. Briggs.
Yeah, I ran a used car business back in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm.
So much money. I wonder where it really came from. Mr. Briggs, if a police officer may speak his mind, you will find Indochina hospitable, but only to a point. There are evil men, Mr. Briggs, who found the war profitable. Now, some of these men may consider my country a safe hiding place. It is not, Mr. Briggs. It is not.
Listening to Screen Directors Playhouse production of Saigon, starring Alan Ladd and introduced by the director of the film, Mr. Leslie Fenton. You are in Albuquerque. The chief has stopped for 15 minutes. You, bored and restless from your long journey, step out of your air-conditioned train into New Mexico's withering heat. Listlessly, you pace up and down the platform, waiting for the All aboard! Right now, what you'd give for a... Hey, what's that little blue sign in the restaurant window? Oh, brother. Pabst Blue Ribbon. Finest beer served. Anywhere. Yes, during these hot summer days, you're just one of millions of men all over America to whom that Pabst Blue Ribbon sign means welcome relief. For Pabst Blue Ribbon does something more than quench your thirst. It gives you taste. Blue Ribbon taste. The kind of taste you can't get anywhere else in the world except in that Pabst Blue Ribbon bottle. And fortunately, you can get that Blue Ribbon bottle all over the world. Yes, you hear it everywhere. In Albuquerque and Ashtabula and Appleton and Amarillo. Pabst Blue Ribbon. Finest beer served. Anywhere. Your taste will tell you why. Now, back to our Screen Director's production of Saigon, starring Alan Ladd.
Larry, Pete, I can't find Susan anywhere. She's left the hotel. She's disappeared.
Mike, forget her. She walked out on us.
What have you guys got against her? She hasn't done anything. She... Ah, forget it.
Yeah. Some mishmash we got him into.
That isn't all. We only flew into Indochina in a plane that might be stolen for all we know. We were hired by a guy with all the earmarks of being on the wrong side of the law. We have no legitimate reason for being here. And to top it off, Keon tagged me with Susan's briefcase. Kate, we've got to beat it out of here and try to get lost in Saigon until we straighten this thing out.
Well, we can't fly. That plane has a sib for a gas tank.
A riverboat is leaving for Saigon in the morning.
The one with the mouse aboard?
Yeah. We're going to make plans for the mouse and the man, Pete. I kind of think Mike is going to be a lot happier with her than without her. May I come in?
Briggs, what are you doing on...
The boys and I are taking a little river voyage for our health, Susie.
But you said you were...
I changed my mind. And I'm changing our deal. The briefcase was mailed to Saigon this morning. But in my name, not yours.
You heel.
No, take it easy. You'll get it back. But supposing you play ball.
What is it this time?
Be nice to Mike.
Oh, now, isn't that sweet?
Mike's fond of you, Susan. He's a good kid.
I'm touched.
Try to be nice. Even for you, it must be worth $500,000.
You know all the answers, don't you? All right, I'll be nice to Mike. But if it was you, there wouldn't be enough money in the world.
Some scow this is. And Mike thinks it's a cruise to Havana.
He's as happy as a kid who found his lost pocket knife.
Ah, love. I wish I had a mouse. I wish I had a mouse. Uh-oh.
Hmm? What's the matter?
We got company. Cop company.
Mr. Briggs and Mr. Rocco. How fortunate we should be traveling together.
A pleasure, Lieutenant. Now, if you'll pardon
me. You left the village rather unexpectedly, gentlemen.
The pressure of business. You understand.
I do not, Mr. Briggs. When we arrive at Saigon, your entire party will be held for inquiry.
I see. And how long will that take?
Justice in the Orient, Mr. Briggs, is sure but sluggish. A month or two, perhaps less, perhaps more.
Look, Keon, we haven't got a month or two. We don't know the whole story ourselves. But we might be able to find out in Saigon. If you leave us free to operate.
But what if you should leave Saigon?
The police will see that we don't.
Yes, I'm afraid so, Mr. Briggs. Well, what have I to lose?
Yeah, sure. It's like playing cards with a stacked deck.
A very apt metaphor, Mr. Rocco. Good day, gentlemen.
Well, if it isn't the amazing Mr. Briggs... All alone and mooning at the moonlight.
Hello, Susan.
Larry, I want to say something. That money, I don't know anything about it. Alex Maris asked me to carry it. The shots. I don't understand it.
Okay, Susan.
I've acted pretty awful, I guess. I'm sorry.
You've got an apology coming, too, you know.
Larry, this... Business with Mike. It isn't fair to him. It isn't right.
He's crazy about you.
It's because he doesn't know what I'm like.
What are you like?
Like this.
Susan, I'm going to tell you about Mike. He was wounded during the war. The doctors say he has only a little while to live. He doesn't know.
Oh.
Go and find him, Susan. It's kind of nice here on the river. Tomorrow we'll be in Saigon.
Hey, Larry. Come on out here on the balcony. Some city, this Saigon. Oh, it even looks good at night. Ah, man, this is luxury. Classy hotel, plenty of dough.
They call it the Paris of the Orient, Pete.
Think I'll take a walk. Want to come along?
Yeah, I'll lean to the door, though. I've got a few things I want to talk over with Susan.
She's a funny mouse. Can't figure her.
Doing a fine job, Pete.
Yeah. There's her room across the hall. Well, good night, Skipper.
Good night, Pete.
Who is it?
It's Larry. Susan, I just wanted to tell you I'm grateful for all you've done for Mike.
It's all right, forget it.
You've worked wonders for him.
You better go, Larry.
There's one more thing.
Yes?
It's about Maris. All of us are in trouble with the police, Susan, because of the money. Only Maris knows the truth about it. I've got to know if he arrives in Saigon. And there's a chance he will if he's free.
A very good chance, Mr. Briggs. Welcome to Saigon.
Maris. Do you always give your greetings with a gun?
I regret it quite as much as you. But you have the key to certain funds that belong to me. I resent that, Mr. Briggs. And quite as much I resent the fact that you and your crew have been forcing your attentions upon Susan.
You make a lovely couple together.
Susan and I have had a long talk about the money. We understand each other, don't we, Susan?
I think we do, Alex.
It is too bad about the young, well, what's his name, Mike?
Mike. What about him?
I went to his room to question him. He became quite uncontrollable. I was forced to strike him with my gun butt.
You yellow gun having...
Mr. Briggs.
He's sick. Any shock can kill him.
Unfortunate. Now, it appears that my money is in the Saigon post office in your name. Therefore, we will wait in your room until morning when you will get it.
Alex, if we're leaving in the morning, I'd better get some sleep.
Sweet dreams, Susie.
They will be. Now that I don't have to look forward to holding the infant's hot little hand.
All right, Mr. Briggs. Into your room.
A long night, isn't it, Mr. Briggs?
Maris, I promise you. If you've killed Mike, I...
Mr. Briggs, it's Lieutenant Keon.
Who is he?
The police.
Tell him to come in. And remember this gun.
Come in, Lieutenant.
Oh, you have a guest.
Lieutenant Keon, this is...
Mr. Chanuk. Carl Chanuk.
A pleasure. Mr. Briggs, I thought we might compare notes. You see, I've gleaned a few scraps of information. For instance, I know your plane was owned by a Mr. Alex Maris of Shanghai. Pardon me, Mr. Chanuk, if I bore you with these few business details.
Not at all. Go right on, Lieutenant.
Maris is wanted by the Shanghai police as a war profiteer and collaborator. Now, Mr. Briggs, about our arrangement, what have you to tell me?
Nothing, Lieutenant. Nothing at all.
Pity.
Hey, Larry, I was just out with the cutest... Oh, company, huh?
Pete, we're busy.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to tell you about the new mouse I met. She's the cutest thing I... Hey, here's Susie.
I've brought you a present, Mr. Maris.
Susan, go back to your room.
Your money, Alex, the price of treachery.
Shut up.
Oh, Lieutenant Keon, I want to thank you for having the postmaster open the post office.
You blonde Judas, I will kill you for that.
Let's get in, Pete.
Okay, skip.
Death interferes so frequently with justice. Mr. Maris is no more.
Susan, are you all right?
Look. Pete.
Pete? He's not moving. Pete. Pete. Pete!
I regret, Mr. Briggs, that you must learn this in such unfortunate surroundings at my office.
You phoned the hospital.
Mike Perry is dead. He passed away within a few minutes of Mr. Rocco.
Larry.
Mike. Pete. Both gone.
I made a plan. I was going to let all of you work it out for me. But it went astray.
I made a plan, too. I was the skipper. They listened to me.
Harry, you mustn't. Don't torture yourself.
What do you do? What do you say?
You finally run out of answers, Larry. Just like the rest of us.
Nothing left. No more answers, Susie.
Maybe. If we try to find them. Maybe if we tried together.
You are both free to leave Saigon whenever you wish.
Come on, Susie. Let's try. The two of us.
Just heard the last act of Saigon. In a moment, our star, Alan Ladd, and our screen director, Leslie Fenton, will return to the microphone. You've seen pictures and read stories about fabulous parties here in Hollywood. Well, take it from me, most of those glamorous affairs are strictly for publicity. When movie stars really entertain, they do it simply and modestly, with a buffet supper consisting of, well, for example, cold cuts, potato salad, and tall, friendly glasses of Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. Everything in perfect taste. Blue Ribbon taste. And it's that Blue Ribbon taste that makes this internationally famous beer so popular, not only here in Hollywood, but all over America. Yes, you hear it everywhere. In San Francisco's famous eating places, in Pennsylvania's hospitable inns, in Michigan's picturesque summer resorts. Pabst Blue Ribbon. Finest beer served. Anywhere. Your taste will tell you why. Next week on Screen Director's Playhouse, Pabst Blue Ribbon presents Fort Apache, starring John Wayne and Ward Bond. Now, here again is tonight's star, Alan Ladd, and Screen Director Leslie Fenton.
Spent a lot of hours together on movie sets, Alan. But this is the first time we've ever faced each other across a microphone.
Unless it's a wonderful opportunity to get something off my chest. Brother, am I going to expose you?
Shh, people are listening.
Good. Folks, if it weren't for the Leslie Fentons, for the directors of Hollywood, we actors and actresses wouldn't be... Well, we just wouldn't be. It's the people like Les with their skill and experience who literally and figuratively make motion pictures.
That's a wonderful compliment, Alan. Thanks. From all the directors.
Good night, Les. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
And good night to you, Alan Ladd and Leslie Fenton. Tonight, before you go to bed, peek inside your refrigerator. Check up on your supply of Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. Remember, tomorrow is the beginning of another lazy weekend. 2 whole days to relax and take life easy. Be good to yourself. Be good to your friends. Serve Pabst Blue Ribbon. Finest beer served. Anywhere. Your taste will tell you why. Saigon was presented through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, whose current release is Top of the Morning, starring Bing Crosby, Anne Blythe, and Barry Fitzgerald. Alan Ladd is currently being seen in the Paramount picture The Great Gatsby. Portions of tonight's broadcast were transcribed. Listen again next week when Pabst Blue Ribbon presents...
Screen Directors Playhouse, production Fort Apache, director John Ford, stars John Wayne, Ward Bond.
Screen Directors Playhouse is brought to you by the Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Newark, New Jersey, and Peoria, Illinois, and sent your way with the best wishes of the Pabst Blue Ribbon dealers from coast to coast. James Wallington speaking.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
That's it for this episode of The Relic Radio Show. You can find more from Escape, Screen Directors Playhouse, this podcast, all the others at relicradio.com. You'll also find a legacy of laughs there once again. Our comedy podcast is back. Available again on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Visit the website for more on that. You'll also find our Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Give that button a click. It's how this is all made possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday for another episode of The Relic Radio Show.